Hi, I'm Ann Martino. I'm here with Laura Pershing Rayner. Laura was kind enough to sit and talk with me about her career as a storyteller, both locally and nationally. For many in town, Laura is considered the face of storytelling here at the library. Even her stories about storytelling are entertaining. I am going to start by asking Laura how she became interested in storytelling.
You know, I think that it was at my sister Lisa's sleepover party where her friends were gathered around on this funky old mattress in my parents' basement in their pajamas, and they said, "Tell us a scary story," because I was the big sister. That was my role. And I got into this giant story that was so gory and so scary that one of them started to cry in the middle. And I felt terrible, but I also felt very powerful. It was great. But of course, before that, I was the little story sponge at the table whenever the family gathered. So I knew I loved stories because I was always listening to the elders tell stories that were not always appropriate for my age or politically correct or anything else. But that was, for my family, like breathing. Storytelling was like breathing.
That's a wonderful beginning. And I'm wondering if you had any training or a mentor or anyone to sort of pull you into storytelling.
I was really lucky that way. I think I would say I had three mentors, starting with my grandmother, who I talk about all the time. She lived to be 105. She came from Russia to an arranged marriage, taught herself English, taught herself how to write in the language, and told stories with this fantastic Yiddish accent, and was just a natural drama queen. In her stories, she was always so beautiful and so clever. And I adored listening to my grandmother. She was a huge part of my life in many ways. Her son, my father, was also a natural-born storyteller. And then when I became a children's librarian in the 70s, I was lucky enough to have the children's librarian extraordinaire, Marcia Schaefer, who moved away from Ann Arbor many, many years ago. But she was a true mentor on many levels. And she told me something really important. She said, "If you only learn one story to tell per year, think about how many stories you will have under your belt by the time you're my age." And I thought she was really old. She was about 41. And that was great advice. And one of my all-time favorite stories came from her.
Was there another mentor or was that it? Was it the
My grandmother, my father, and Marcia. And of course, you know, you look back on your life and you think of so many mentors when it comes to storytelling when you've been doing it as long as I have. You know, Donald Davis, my dear friend from the South, is an incredible storyteller and has taught me so much about structuring stories and performance techniques, that type of thing.
Now, you, I know, tell stories for the library, but don't you also tell stories outside the library?
I do. That's sort of a natural extension of what I do. I travel to schools, and I'm lucky enough to get to travel to festivals occasionally. I get to go to Yosemite, to Mariposa in a couple of months and tell stories in the middle of the park.
Yeah.
And my poor husband has to come along with me to support me and hike and eat good food while I'm telling stories.
And I'm recalling that you were named the Storyteller of the Year. Could you talk a little about that?
Sure. That was kind of funny because I submitted a story about my grandmother because I saw there was a contest. And I thought of it as more of a writing contest. And I submitted the story, and then I was invited to come tell it with two other tellers. And the atmosphere was the best. It was in the middle of this cornfield in Ohio at this big festival, and there was a wonderful audience. And my family, my entire family came. So my parents and my children and my husband, Kenny. And we just had a great time. And then when I won the top award, I had to say there was something just so goofy about the experience in that I wasn't really expecting it to be this public venue. And the first thing that popped out of my mouth as they handed me this pretend enormous check was, oh, I'm so glad this wasn't a bathing suit competition. I don't know why I said that, but that's the first thing that came to mind.
Oh, that's fabulous. What year was that?
I don't remember.
Do you remember? Okay.
I want to say early 90s.
That was early
90s. Children were pretty young.
Small.
Then.
Laura, you actually pulled me into the Ann Arbor Library with your storytelling when my son was young. I brought him to one of your story times, and I put him in the car seat to take him home, and he said, baby leopard, do not mess with fire. And he was two, and of course I thought, oh, Laura's brilliant. She gets my son to talk about her stories. So I'm wondering how you got started at the library telling stories. Has it always been preschool and babies?
I actually started with older children at the library because I was an outreach librarian, which meant that my job was to go to after-school programs at Peace Neighborhood Center, Community Center on Main Street, go to a few preschools. I remember driving out to this one preschool that was on a farm and telling stories in a treehouse and thinking, I have a job where I get to tell stories in a treehouse. But the big challenge was, of course, and it's the same today in most libraries when you hear about story time, it's the reading of beautiful picture books, which is a great thing. But I, at the very beginning of my career, couldn't do that because the children coming into the community centers had been sitting in school all day long. And I needed to have eye contact. I needed to get them up jumping around and dancing. I needed participation in my stories or I would lose them instantly. And so I started off running with storytelling as well as story reading. I would mix in reading books. But if I didn't story tell, I felt like I lost an intimacy that I needed to connect with the kids right away and keep them there for more than 5 minutes. So that was just an interesting experience for me. And once I discovered that storytelling has a magic because the story is never the same. If there's a baby crying in the room at the time you're telling the story, you might shift it a little. You might make it louder so people don't notice. If there's parents chatting in the back of the room, you might get softer so everyone notices. And then the parents look up and realize that the children are really focused on the stories. So to me, that is the most special thing about storytelling, is that there's always a change in the story. I don't get tired of stories very often because I feel like they're different because the audience is different and your whole experience, the atmosphere is different. And I learned that was something to learn right away at the very beginning, going and doing outreach with story times.
I think that it would be wonderful if at this point you could tell us a story, one of your favorites perhaps, or one that resonates through the years for you. I know you've been doing this for a while, so would you mind doing that?
Not at all. I'm thinking it might be fun to tell you a story that I really tell more to children and adults who have grown up on the Cinderella tale. And the reason I think I'll tell this one is because it was one of my most awkward moments that I first heard this story. I was brought into a middle school on a Friday afternoon in the spring, and the person who hired me to tell stories to seventh graders in May on a beautiful sunny day at the end of the school day said to me as I was walking up the stairs to the stage, "Good luck." And I thought, oh man, what am I going to do? This is going to be difficult. And the principal was on the stage to introduce me. And the principal said, "We are very lucky today to have a storyteller come and entertain you for the last hour of the school day. And just to introduce her, I'm going to share a little tale of my own." And then he told this story. And it was so great that I was sure I was going to flop afterwards. And I've been telling this story ever since. I didn't flop. I made it through. But I afterwards went up to the principal and said, thanks a lot for setting me up because that's the best story I ever heard and I want to learn it. And he sent it to me in the mail, pre-email days. He sent this story to me in the mail. So here we go. Tunce upon a wine, there was a gritty little pearl named Printerella. She had two sisty uglers and a micked webstuther. They made her flub all the sclores, wean all the clindos, and do all the wordy dirk. One day, the ping issued a proclamation. All galligible earls, drancy fest ball. Now, Prinderella's two sisty uglers had drancy fesses, but all Prinderella had was a wordy dag. She scat down and scried, but along came her merry fodgother. No drancy fess, cried Prinderella. So, in the eiling of a twink, her merry fodgother changed the wordy dag into a drancy fess, and a cumpkin into a parridge. Oh, Prinderella and the synths pranced all night long. But at the moke of stridnight, she went running down the stalus peps and slopped her tripper. What a shirty dame. The next day, the pring issued a new proclamation. All galligible earls, sly on the tripper. Prinderella's two sisty uglers slide on the tripper, and it fit and dit. But when Prinderella slid on the tripper, it fit dit. Oh, Prinderella and the synths were married and lived happily afty everward. Hardest story I ever learned how to tell. I visualized the words and then switched the letters because I'm so bad at memorizing things. And I usually goof it up, which makes the kids laugh even harder. Adults love the story, of course, because they're one step ahead of me and they're getting the twists and turns and trying to figure it out ahead. For older kids, middle school, high school, it's really fun to tell a story where you're assuming a great amount of intelligence on the part of the audience. And I think that a twisted and backwards version of a story, a spoonerism is what they're referred to as. Spoonerism is a great little ditty to have in between other longer stories.
Well, thank you, Laura. That was delightful. I am wondering if you would speak in general about what makes audiences laugh when you tell a story. What is it?
You know, that is a really good question because I'm still asking myself that. I feel like audiences are always surprising me. The 3-year-olds through 5-year-olds who come to preschool story time, the toddlers, even the babies at baby story time will sometimes laugh when I don't expect them to. And I love that. It's such a gift. It's such a surprise. And then I'll remember where they laughed. And the next time I tell that story, you better believe I'm going to try to elicit that laugh again. But I have learned a couple of things. One is if I'm truly in the story, if I'm truly present in the story, I can get as goofy as possible. And if I get that goofy, so do the children. So I need to be loose and I need to feel like I'm seeing the images really clearly so that that bear becomes a comedian. That bear is just ridiculous. And if the kids start giggling, then that bear is going to get even more outrageous. And so it's kind of going with the flow for me. But the other thing I've learned, because I'm a pretty fast speaker, and I've always had coffee before story time every morning, is that if I force myself to slow down and even stop for a half a second before I do something, I've set the audience up. They're waiting to see what will happen. And if I do something kind of silly and funny after that half second, sometimes I get a bigger laugh. So I'm still learning, which is my favorite part about the whole experience, is that you're always, when you're communicating with other folks, learning as you go.
What do you hope children and caregivers take home with them when you've had a preschool story time at the library?
I always hope that I'm entertaining adults as well as children. But for the children, my greatest hope is that they walk away with a love of language, that they get a sense that language has rhythm and texture, that they're open to beginning reading skills because they're hearing that stories are surprising and delightful and funny. And if they can walk away with the love of learning and the love of language, that is the best thing that could possibly come out of it for me. I like to throw in little sophisticated jokes occasionally so that caregivers and parents who had to get on the bus with the child or push the stroller or get in the car to get them there are at least a little bit entertained within the half an hour of story time, that I get some laughs from them too.
And what role does music play in your story times?
A lot of the older stories, the folk tales, are just naturals for putting in rhythmic chants or little songs. And it's a meeting place in the story, I think, for children and adults. It's a place where people can kind of relax in the story and know it's coming and know that there's some kind of rhythm to be repeated, and it's an opportunity for them to join in. So I think that music being such a universal language is a very natural part of a lot of the older, more traditional stories.
And so that does encourage audience participation?
Yes, that's always a goal when you have a room full, like we do sometimes, many of us story ladies. Being a story lady yourself, you know this, that you really feel like you're wanting participation. That's your way of knowing that the audience is with you, whether they're 2 or 32. If you get a laugh, or if you hear those voices singing that song in the middle of the story or making a sound for an effect, then you know that they're with you. And that is very important because it's such an intimate experience between storyteller and audience. So I almost feel like music and participation are checking in places. Ah, yes, they're here with me now.
And is there ever a time when your audiences at the Ann Arbor District Library are too rowdy or too involved or too participatory?
Definitely too rowdy sometimes. No, I do that to myself. I get them to that rowdy place. And then there's the interesting challenge of bringing the audience back. I feel like transitions between stories are really important. The kids need to move around. They need to jiggle. They need to talk to their friend about what just happened in the story. They need to cuddle with mom or dad. So I feel like noise during transitions, although I'm thinking, uh-oh, okay, how do I get them back for a story, is a really important natural part of the story time as a whole. So rowdy is great, but the challenge of getting from rowdy back into the introduction to the next story is always interesting. And that's where finger plays and little nursery rhymes and songs come in. Too involved is something that I have to work with, because sometimes I get so into the characters in the story that I can scare young children. And so if a child is too involved, and I was that kind of child, so I know, I have to be careful. When I look out and I see that the wolf that's kind of drooling and kind of ready to pounce is scaring a child, then I give them that opportunity to become the wolf. The whole audience becomes the wolf. Okay, can you drool like that wolf? Okay, show me your long, sharp teeth. Raise those scary claws. I was the child that was always hiding behind the sofa watching The Wizard of Oz when the witch came out, but thinking that The Wizard of Oz was my absolute favorite experience of the whole year. So I know those kids, and I have to be careful with over-involvement and the intensity that I can create sometimes in stories.
I recently read a book by Elizabeth Bird called Children's Literature Gems, or The Gems of Children's Literature. And she talked about library storytelling being different, really, than storytelling. That storytelling is something separate. And I'm wondering how you learn stories, Laura. That one that you performed earlier, you were very, this is just fabulous. So how does one learn a story?
For me, I have to hear myself telling it. I will often, when I'm learning a story that isn't one that I wrote myself, so I'm learning a traditional tale, if I have a chapter from a book or the story in the picture book or whatever, I will often set the book down and create some kind of little visual. So if it's a simple enough story, I don't have to go to the listening stage. If it's a simple enough story, I can look at it and I can say, I'm going to draw out a very skeletal version of the story, almost like cave drawings with stick figures. This happens, then that happens, then that happens. And pick some keywords and put those keywords in those frames with those pictures. And then I feel like I see the whole story in front of me. That's one way. If it's a story, even if it's a story I've written myself for adults, but I want to catch those juicy details each time that I think flesh out the story, then I will record the story for myself, listen to it while I'm doing things like washing dishes, cooking dinner, going for a walk. So when I'm relaxed, I'm absorbing it through osmosis, and that helps me. But usually when I'm working with the children at the library, I either do that picture format or I just tell that story to myself over and over again. My favorite was when my children were young enough to be captive audience in the back seat of the car, all strapped in and no place to go. And then I was learning stories very fast because I was telling them all the time. Now my poor husband has to listen occasionally. He doesn't mind.
You said that you're writing stories. Is that part of what you do as a storyteller, is you create your own material?
Every once in a while, I'll tell a story that I wrote at the library. I have an opportunity to tell a story for very young children. My heart with my own writing is in taking the stories from my crazy family and putting them out there. I have permission from my family to go a little wild with those, to change a few details, to make them more universal. And I always, before I write a story, whether it's for children or adults, ask myself the big W question. Why? Why do I want to tell this story? Why do people want to hear it, whether they're two or they're adults? And that's just an interesting question to ask yourself. Why do you feel the need to tell the story? And I ask myself that so I'm not just up there blabbing away about something that nobody has the least bit of interest in hearing about.
Laura, didn't you record a couple of CDs that we have in our library collection?
I actually have four CDs now. I just created two more CDs within the last couple of months.
Are they all storytelling?
They are.
They are.
They're all storytelling. Okay. Yep. They're all original stories.
Your original stories.
Yes.
Okay. And how are you able to inspire so many parents and teachers and even kids now who want to follow Laura and be storytellers? It's fabulous. I've seen that at the library over the years, and I signed up for storytelling at the library because of you and others who were storytellers. And I guess that said, I'm wondering what tips and tricks you might offer to those of us who are following in your footsteps.
Oh, that's an awesome question. I think the most important thing, although it sounds so basic, is pick stories that you absolutely love. I think that it's just contagious. When you pick a story that has made you laugh or touched you in some way, or you look at it and you go, participation, the kids are going to be yelling this word with me even before I ask them to, and something excites you in the story, then you're off and running. Because I really think that you deal with those kinds of stories that are special to you in a different way, that you communicate them in a different way. Being truly who you are, which takes a while, I know, because when I get up on a stage at some of these festivals and there's 1,000 people in the audience, it's slightly terrifying. But if I just tell myself, be you, let the story flow, let them learn who you are through the story, then you will be accepted and they will relax and sit back and enjoy the journey with you. And I think that is the case whether you're telling to 1,000 adults at a festival where they've flown you in, and that's the case when you're at your sweet little room in the library with your regular families who adore all the story ladies and find that they're modeling after all the story ladies and gentlemen. We have story gentlemen now. All of us are reaching parents by giving them the opportunity to hear those nursery rhymes they may not have heard since childhood, to learn a finger play. In this community, we're so lucky to have people from all over the world living here, and they're loving learning the language and learning traditions from this country and bringing us ideas of their own traditions, which is so exciting. So I feel like there's a lot of opportunity for role modeling with caregivers and parents and grandparents. We have a lot of grandparents who come. But I think the more natural we can be with our story selection and with our storytelling styles, the more we know about ourselves, the more we can model for other adults.
To learn more about storytelling at the library, go to jump.aadl.org. Music for this episode was This Place by Connor Thewitt, which you can find in the AADL catalog by going to aadl.org/magnitude. This has been a production of the Ann Arbor District Library.